This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 8 of the Mother Freaking Real Life podcast. Today, I have, I think I say it every week, but I really do mean it every week. I have a very special guest with me today, Melissa Fleming. Melissa and her husband are founders of the Austin and Round Rock chapter of The Cure Starts Now. We are going to be delving into her story and what inspired her to get involved with that a whole lot over the next hour. We're going to try to do hour and 20 minutes or so. But before we delve into any of it, we're going to start the way we always start by Melissa introducing herself. So Melissa, say hello to everyone.
Hi, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yes, I'm actually very happy that you're here. And the reason you're here, which you and I just kind of hashed out, but no one else got to hear, is because you have a friend, Susan.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Who reached out to me after listening to an episode, I think a few weeks ago. She kind of listened and heard kind of why I asked guests to be on, what the kind of categories are. And she thought of you and thought that you actually kind of fit all three categories. She felt like you had gone through something difficult and had some wisdom potentially to share.
No pressure.
And no pressure. Susan expects you to be very wise, that you were involved in something inspiring and just that you were a fun and interesting person to talk to. So no pressure at all, but those are the three categories you have to live up to. Tell everyone three things about yourself.
I'm going to be celebrating my 20-year anniversary in March.
Okay.
I got married very young, just for the record.
Okay, right. I'm sure that you did when you were like, what, 10?
Actually, I was pretty young. I was 23 at the time. So that's young, especially for this day and age. Uh-huh. But, and I've got three kids and own my own business, Allstate Insurance Agency, for the past 9 years with a business partner who's also my best friend, Kelly.
Okay.
Who's been very supportive, like so many dear friends these past few years.
Okay. And that was three, right?
That was three.
That was three. Okay. So I'm going to just say a very brief statement, then we're going to delve so much more into that. But the reason that you're here is because your middle son,
yes,
Brock, passed away.
Yes.
And he passed away. Tell us how long ago.
It was 2.5 years ago, December 10th, 2016, before Christmas. Okay. And he was 7 years old at the time.
Okay. So tell us a little bit, not necessarily yet about this, you know, the circumstances of how he passed away, but just tell us about Brock.
He's a cute little man
who looks just like you. I just realized when you walked in the door.
Yes. Always called him my shadow because he was always follow me and he was right behind me. I never had to worry about him wandering off because he wanted to be in my lap, me holding him or right beside me. But really the cutest little kid. He was always smiling. He's always happy. He was a kid that just had a lot of energy, mm-hmm, in a good way. Like he was just always bouncing and happy, but he wasn't like rambunctious, right? So just a good kid, and other kids were always just attracted to be around him. Just did not have a mean spirit in the world. Now he would be a little, he definitely was a little opinionated, but I like that. That's a strength.
Thing, yes.
That's a strength. And I could easily, though, get him to agree with me if I would take something away. He loved Batman. That was his favorite thing. So
okay.
He'd have stickers on the walls with Batman. And if he was in trouble, I'd tell him to go get me one of the Batman stickers. And he thought he was getting away with something because he would go find the smallest Batman that he could. And I would just laugh because I knew like it was still hard for him to give it up. But he
right.
thought he was winning and he wasn't. So he's just a cute kid.
He sounds really cute. I've seen pictures of him quite
yes.
a few at this point, and he's super cute. And like I said, you guys aren't able to see Melissa or Brock right now, but you guys look just alike, I think. So tell us about what happened to Brock.
So it's a little crazy. He was just walking the dog with my husband and his big sister, Jenna, who's 2 years and 3 months older, so close in age. and they were just walking the dog, and he was running, and he tripped and fell. And so when he landed on his knuckles, which isn't a normal way to fall. You would brace yourself.
Right.
And so I had just gotten home from work, and I come in and I hear him crying, and I'm like, okay, you know, it's been a long day. Let me go in there. Cause you know, your kids, they always want mommy.
Right.
So I walk in, and he's got his knees all scraped up, and he has this huge goose egg on his forehead. And my husband recently retired APD, but he's a police officer. So, I mean, I look to him for medical things. So I'm kind of looking at him, and it's like, I think we need to go to the ER because he was looking pretty bad. And James's like, yeah, let's go. And so we put him in the car and we go to the first ER. And on the way, he now doesn't know who I am.
Okay.
And so we walk in. I'm like, he's falling. You know, you're going to need to do like a CT scan or something, see what's going on. And they're like, well, we can't help you here. You got to go somewhere else. So now we head to North Austin Medical and go in. And so they did a CT scan. Then he started calling me daddy and James mommy.
Okay.
So at least he kind of knew who we were, and he was never scared. Of course, we were. So it's kind of funny because they went to take get the CT scan, and they're like, who do you want to take, mommy or daddy? And he's like, daddy. And then I would start walking. I'd have him point. And so they did the CT scan, and they're like, you know, he's good. You know, they did all the neurological tests. We just think he has a severe concussion, but he's okay. There's no bleeding in the brain, because that's what they're looking for.
Okay.
And so we go home. By the next morning, he still doesn't recognize his sister, but he knows who we are, and he's now walking on his tippy toes, and he's starting to have partial facial paralysis. So when he smiles, he has a half smile.
Okay. Were the doctors, sorry to cut you off, but were the doctors at all kind of concerned, or
not like, when we went home?
Not even that he was like mixing up names, like they
no, just, like, it's severe concussion.
Okay,
yeah, the amnesia part really was the concussion.
Okay,
and so he had a lot of things going on in his head, really. Mm-hmm. So now we go to his pediatrician that morning, who I love, and so we're looking at her, and so she's doing all kinds of tests, and she's like, "Now they just said a concussion," and we're like, "Yeah," and they're like, "Well, don't leave until you set an appointment with a specialist." So we go home, and within 2 hours, she calls us and she's like, I want you to go to Dell Children's and get an MRI. Okay. So me being naive or not wanting to like want anything to be serious. Yeah. I'm like, okay, so let's go. And so now James and I are headed down there. Jenna was supposed to have dance. Just then a friend pulls up to get her, and I was like, just keep her.
Yeah.
So we go down to Dell, and then when we're at the ER, they're kind of like, oh, silly pediatrician, overreacting. He's just got a severe concussion. And then I said, Brock, smile. And as soon as they saw his smile, they're like, okay, we're going to get an MRI. Mm-hmm. So then about 12:30 the next morning is when they pulled us into a room, and they told us that he had a brain tumor, and that we would meet with the doctors in a few hours when they came around. So that's when you just start going, okay.
Right.
And it's 2016. So you're like, okay, we can do this. Like, it's cancer, but we got this.
Right.
And if there's one thing about me and my husband is that we'll fight.
Right.
So whatever we need to do, we will do for our children. Yeah. Right. And so then the next day we meet with them, and they said, you know, we'd like to do a biopsy. And the tumor was huge, and it was a Friday. They didn't want to do it until Monday. So I was like, fine, we can do a Monday. And we wanted a biopsy too, because we wanted to confirm what type of brain tumor he had.
Right.
And so we took him home over the weekend. Then he got to play with his friends. So going to the playground, we're kind of watching him because, I mean, he's still on his tippy toes, mm-hmm. but he's having fun. He's happy, laughing. So go in Monday for the biopsy. And then, because of the tumor and how large it was, because it was growing so aggressively, because he has a concussion and now he's gotten a biopsy. After the biopsy, he can no longer hold his head up. He can't walk. He can't talk. He can't move his body. I mean, like, he can't even move his arm across the bed. And this is a 6-year-old.
Right.
It was a month before he turned 7.
Okay.
And then we're just trying to get our head around this. And then they pull James and I into a little room. And before the biopsy on Friday, we asked the doctor, what are the outcomes of this biopsy? And he said, you've got three options. And we're like, what? Either it's not cancerous, which I knew it was.
Okay.
Or it's cancerous with a cure, or it's cancer with no cure. Mm-hmm. And so I started telling all my friends, like, you got to pray.
Right.
We want the kind with a cure.
Right.
So we're in that little room. And then they told us that he had DIPG. Mm-hmm. And that, I'm sorry, but there is no cure. That he can get radiation, which is the only standard treatment. They get their entire lifetime of radiation in 6 weeks, goes every day for 6 weeks, 33 treatments. And then hopefully it helps. No way to know if it will or not. And then you just wait for it to start to progress, to grow back, and then he's gone. And so then you got to walk back into the hospital room.
Right.
And smile.
Yep.
And try to encourage a kid.
Right.
And you've got these people standing around you. Yep. And all you want to do is tell them to get out.
Right. So I have a million questions already that are even off the record from what I thought of. So they pull you into the office and then y'all have to go back into the hospital room where Brock is.
Yes.
Also your other daughter or no?
She, I think, would come in and out. You know, I say I think because my family, I have amazing family. I have an older brother, younger brother. I've got my mom. They all live in Houston. So, of course, I mean, they were driving the next morning.
Right.
I mean, they were with us all weekend. Right. Right. And then my dad and stepmom live in Florida, but they were on their way. So as soon as Brock was diagnosed, like I had to have all my attention on Brock.
Right.
Which was hard because in, you know, I'm a girl in the middle of two brothers, mm-hmm. and I was raised more like the boys get one standard and the girls the other standard. Yeah. So in my family, raising my kids, everyone was treated equal. Mm-hmm. Tension was equal. No question about it. So all of a sudden, Jenna's going, why is Brock getting all mommy's attention?
Right.
So I literally rallied everybody. Jenna got everybody. Mm-hmm. And she got like 100 people.
Right.
Brock got me because yeah. Brock didn't want anybody but yeah. me. So I think she came to the hospital to see him, but we're trying to figure out what to say around him and not.
Right.
And there's so many things going through my head of how am I going to take care of Jenna? Like you've just told me that her brother is going to die.
Right.
And how am I going to help Jenna through this too? So, yeah. So she was kind of in sporadic and we were just trying to get him home.
Right. So how much longer were y'all in the hospital? Was it just?
Well, so at this point it's kind of serious because, right. And I didn't realize it at the time, but this is an extremely aggressive tumor and it's on the brainstem. Mm-hmm. So your brainstem is considered high value real estate. It controls your breathing, your heart rate. I mean, everything. And the reason that kids die is because it swells and it just swells in the wrong place and they're gone.
Okay.
And so we're sitting there going, okay, our kid has brain tumor and all I know is I need second opinion. And my husband's a researcher and we're calling in favors and yeah. we know the director at Texas Children's. And so we're on the phone with him. And so we get the biopsy and we now know what we have. And so he's like, you got to do radiation. Well, in the meantime, like the doctors are trying to get me to start, but I mean, radiation sounds scary to a 6-year-old. Right. Like, what kind of damage am I causing? I mean, yeah. it's just a whirlwind.
Yes.
And so I remember the nurse, she's probably, I mean, I'm 5'7", she's probably 5'9", and she is about an inch from me. She's like, when are we starting radiation? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I just need a second opinion. When are you getting it? I said, give me an hour. And yeah. she's like, okay. And so they opened up the radiation and had us go over the weekend.
Okay.
Because I didn't realize that, honestly, I don't think they thought he was going to even be able to start radiation yeah. or that he would even make it through because a lot of times the tumors, they fight back. It's like hitting a beehive.
Right.
All the bees swarm.
Yeah.
That's what the tumor does. And mm-hmm. you don't have much room for it to inflame. So if it does, again, they can be gone. So we started treatment right away.
Okay. So the point of the radiation is just to hopefully
get it
prolong,
down.
Hopefully make him more comfortable, more able to still do the things he wants to do
yes.
for longer.
And so, so I think to kind of to go back how long he was in the hospital. So it was, the idea of the radiation is that the tumor is going to react, although it swells at first, then it's going to shrink and that buys you time. All you're looking for is time. Mm-hmm. And so, and our head, we're looking for time so we can find the next option.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
But when he was in the hospital, like he's a kid, he doesn't want to be in the hospital.
Right.
The nurse came in in and said, like they have a chart and it's like, what's the objective of your stay? Mm-hmm. And so I'm just looking at her like, oh my, like really, you're going to ask
this
me these questions right
question
now?
Ever. Yeah.
And Brock raises his hand like a school kid. Well, he's a school kid. And we're like, yes, Brock. And he said to make Brock better.
Yeah.
Yes. And I was like, that's exactly right. Yes. Well, Brock is scared. He's in a hospital. He's not happy. He's not able to walk. And he could yesterday. He doesn't understand. He just wants to go home. And so I could see his spirit going down. Mm-hmm. And so I got back in that same nurse's face and I said, look, like I'm capable. Tell me, write down exactly what I need to do. I mean, at this point, he's on 6 different medications.
Yeah.
He has a feeding tube. And I was like, just show me how to do it. Tell me what to do. And I'll do it at home. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to kill him, then obviously I don't want to do that. But if he stays here, he's going to die because his spirit is not going to allow him to get through this.
Yeah.
And so I didn't realize it, but all the doctors were on board but one. And the other doctors made her agree.
Okay.
Because he was in really bad shape. But we got him home and we immediately went upstairs to our full couch where we'd watch movies. And one of our dear friends, she's an oncologist nurse for adults. So she could come over and help me. She brought me some other things to help me just monitor him and stuff. So we were able to go home probably before we should.
Okay.
But that really set the stage of his entire care, that Brock was first. Whatever he wanted is what was going to motivate James and I.
Yeah.
And that we weren't going to just accept what the doctor said and we were going to tell them and they were going to answer to us, although it was always respectful.
Right.
But I think sometimes parents think that they need to listen to the doctor and what the doctor says goes. But honestly, and especially in this situation, they're learning along with us.
Right.
And it's our kid. And so we got
to figure it out. And y'all obviously know him better than they do. And
nobody cares more about him than us.
Exactly. Yeah. So going back for just a second, after the doctor told you guys the news, it was just the doctor, you and James in the room.
And a nurse.
And a nurse.
Did they scream, really loud scream of horror?
From you?
Yeah.
Okay. See, that's my question is, you know, the initial reaction and also, you know, did the doctor and nurse step out and let you and James have a moment alone together?
You probably needed, I mean, there's probably a reason you're in a small room with no windows.
Yeah.
That you can't jump from.
Yeah.
So no, they were in there. And my brother was in there too. My younger brother is an auditor. And so he's very analytical. And James, you know, he's a police officer and they're used to handling tough situations.
Right.
But that's for other people.
Exactly.
When it's actually just them, totally it's different. Harder. Mm-hmm. So he was honestly in a fog for about a month.
Yeah.
Like he just didn't talk and he couldn't absorb what they were saying.
Yeah.
I mean, and so I immediately went into mommy bear mode, protect my son.
Right.
And I had my brother and then another close friend, Connie, that they were talking to all the doctors and researching and creating spreadsheets and gathering information.
Yeah.
So when James came out of the fog, he could take over because he's a pretty big researcher. So it was kind of that phase. So they were in there. And, you know, when you're told that your kid is going to die, I mean, you start grieving that day.
Right.
And a part of you dies that day. Mm-hmm. And so it was incredibly painful. The only thing worse was when he actually did die.
Yeah. Do you feel like you were able or did you accept the reality of the diagnosis? Or
well,
were
no,
you
no.
like, no, this isn't going to be true of us. This
no,
is not.
It's a fine line. You have to accept reality. You got to face what's going on.
Right.
The added stress with me was that I was a nurse and caregiver. I mean, I'm an insurance agent. I'm an economics major. I'm a math person.
Right.
I don't have a nursing background. Right. So there was a lot of pressure I put on myself. I mean, we got him on a lot of natural supplements. We had another friend that pulled a favor with the doctor, Baylor Scott White, that actually created a compound that I would mix with Gatorade and he and I would drink it together. And they would comment about how great all of his test results were because we knew like this radiation is going to tear his body down. We've got to put good things in it to build it up because everything is about medicine. We need some, and we knew the supplements weren't a cure, but we got to get him feeling good. Mm-hmm. So my whole mission was I got to get him as good as I can, as quick as I can, so he can enjoy what he can.
Yeah.
And we can create some memories.
Right.
But on the other hand, my son was going to be the one that was saved. My son was going to be better because we were doing all these great things.
Right.
And there was no way he was going because if he was going, I was going with him.
Yes.
No, I. And so, you know, and then you have the doctors where it's like, they sit there. So we had, I mean... Doctors, I love them. They're, you know, bittersweet, but, you know, they want you to understand the severity. Like, right. I get it.
Right.
And so Brock, he's just a determined little kid. I tell you what. And he did. I mean, so we asked him, do you know what cancer is? And we immediately had like a therapist, a child therapist. So mm-hmm. I could talk to her about what do I say? When do I say it? How do I answer yeah. questions? And they always said, just be in the moment, like answer it as in the moment. Mm-hmm. So if they said, am I going to be okay? You know, it was, you know, Brock, you know, yesterday you couldn't hold your head up.
Right.
And today you were able to move your arm. You see yeah. how you're improving. You mm-hmm. stay in the moment.
Right.
And so it took about a month and he was able to use the walker. So okay. he was out of the wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And then 2 weeks later, he didn't need the walker anymore.
Okay.
And there are kids that never walk again.
Okay.
And we had physical therapy and then we had occupational therapists because they had to work on getting him to be able to swallow again. Uh-huh. And so, I mean, swallowing like a tablespoon of water is a big deal with them yeah. to not choke and right. stuff. And so, so it's just strengthening exercises. But the physical therapist, she said, I can't teach him what he's doing because he's just sitting on the floor and she's like, can you get up? And he uses a chair and gets up.
Okay.
And we're just like, okay, you
yes,
know,
he can.
And so she's just like, don't underestimate that kid.
Yes.
And whenever he got out of that wheelchair, he kicked it mm-hmm. and we kindly moved it to Granny's house out of our garage.
Okay. So you
didn't have to see it.
That's awesome. So I don't understand, and not that it even matters. It's more just, I don't understand. But prior to him falling on the walk with the dog and bumping his head, he seemed pretty fine.
Yeah.
How come, why did that, was that just total coincidence? Why did that seem to set off the...
It's the opposite. The tumor is what caused him to fall.
Okay.
So so there are signs, but it's not signs that you're going to recognize. And this is right. really true for any brain cancer. Mm-hmm. So what happened is like all of a sudden Brock would randomly throw up. Mm-hmm. So you think, oh, well, he ate something that didn't settle well with the stomach. Yeah. Now, if it's happening every morning... then that's a sign because you're laying flat at night and it increases swelling. So in the morning, the fluid in your brain isn't flowing properly.
Okay.
And so it causes you to have headaches or you can get nauseous. So if you're having headaches in the morning, mm-hmm. Brock, I can count 3 times his entire battle that he had headaches.
Okay.
It's because of the supplements I have had him on. I know hands down.
Uh-huh.
But that is not normal. So he was having the stomach nausea. He never really complained of headaches. 2 days before he was looking at the TV, or actually it might've been the day before, he's looking at the TV and he said, the TV's blurry.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I had glasses. My husband has glasses. Right. His older sister has glasses. So
you're
I'm like, oh, I got to take him to the eye
lens
doctor.
Of brain tumor. I mean, you're just not thinking that.
And then it also affects your balance, but he has always been clumsy.
Okay.
To him, like falling like on a daily ritual is not a big deal.
Right.
But this tumor is so aggressive and it grows so fast. I mean, they think it grows within 3 to 6 months max.
Okay.
And the reason they think that is because once it starts progressing, I mean, Brock only had 6 weeks. I thought I'd have 2. So I was glad to have 6.
Right.
But because once it's recognized and they can see how fast it's growing, they know it's not there very long.
Okay.
So it just pushes in the wrong place that either causes them to be throwing up too much or headaches too extreme. Yeah. 90% of the time it's falling.
Okay.
But even in that situation, you know, they do a CT scan. I hate to tell you, but that brain tumor was there and it was huge.
Yeah.
But they're also trained to look for certain things. They're just looking at the top of his head
right.
and it's at the bottom of his head.
Right.
Although it's there.
But that's just not where
they're looking. And so then when, you know, the next day we're going and with his type, being on the brainstem, majority of time they get facial paralysis. And that's really what separates this brain tumor from other brain tumors recognizable to the eye. So if I go back and look at pictures, I would notice like his smile was off. And so I'm kind of thinking, is he going to need braces? Because I need braces. Jenna had braces.
Yeah.
And so I would say, show your teeth because mm-hmm. it was a better smile. And I just thought, I'm going to have to take him to the orthodontist. And I didn't realize that was starting to be the facial paralysis.
Right.
And then I looked back at pictures from the Saturday before he fell. And when he was squinting, one of his eyes wasn't closing completely.
Okay.
So it usually affects like the left side. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's the facial paralysis. The eye doesn't close. So now the eyes are a little off. The mouth is a little off, but it's so
subtle.
Small. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Subtle. You don't realize it until something extreme. And then you start going back to your head. But that never really bothered me. Like some parents will really get fixated on that. But the reality is it wasn't going to change anything.
Exactly. No.
But it is more of, I have a good friend and her daughter only battled 5 days.
5 days.
4 years old, five days, never got to start radiation, sweet Jade. She fell too as well. And so they were looking for concussion as well. But it doesn't change anything, except if you let it go too long without recognizing it, then you might not get to start radiation.
Right.
So I will tell parents, I mean, they'll sit and be like, you hang up all the time. And the doctors just automatically do CT scans because it's cheaper and it's quicker. But a CT scan is like an X-ray.
Okay.
And so they're looking for more blood flow, fluid flow, right? An MRI is more like a picture, an ultrasound. So it's going to show the mass.
Right.
And so, I mean, I've had people, I'm like, do not leave without an MRI. They're going to do CT scan and send you home. Don't. They'll be like, okay. And next thing I see a post, okay, we're going home. And they said we should follow up with an MRI. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So then I'm like, okay, I can't help people.
Right. I tried to tell you what to do.
I try.
Yes.
And so I think that's why I always go back to, like, you got to, if something doesn't seem right, just keep asking, keep pushing. They answer to you. You don't answer to them.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have changed anything. Fortunately, we were able to catch it in time to do radiation.
Right. So how much, you kind of talked about this a second ago, as far as kind of when Brock would ask questions, how you would answer them, and you had help from a therapist. So how much was Brock and his sister, Jenna, right? Mm-hmm. How much were they aware of the reality of the diagnosis?
So Brock was just a happy kid. He never questioned if he was going to die. He didn't actually ask me a lot of questions. I think he is a lot like me, where we just always see things half full, very positive. You don't really worry about those kind of things. It's just all going to work out.
Right.
I mean, he celebrated his birthday like a month into treatment. So that's why he passed away at 7. I just planned as soon as he was walking again. I mean, we were constantly doing fun things. Yeah. And every day during radiation, as soon as he got radiation, he got to do something fun. So it might have been to go pick out a toy. It might have been to go somewhere, do an activity, whatever he wanted, we did. So he just focused on the positive. And he would tell Jenna, like, Jenna, I'm fine. I'm fine. The cancer's gone. Like, he didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
That's, you know what? I don't want to talk about it either. Yeah. So Jenna was the one that I had to watch a little bit more because she was a little bit older. She asked me, is Brock going to die? And so that's the hard part. Like, my whole life and with my kids, like, I'm very honest and I'm upfront, and ethics is a big part. Like, if you say it, you need to do it.
Yeah.
If you're not going to say it. And so, you know, I'd ask counselor how I do it. So she'd say, stay in the moment. So I would answer her, like, I hope not.
Right.
We're doing everything we can. And that's why we're going to Boston. I mean, we took him to Dana-Farber Boston Children's. We went to the best of the best.
Yeah.
And have him evaluated. And we were trying to get into trials and stuff. And so, so she would be one to ask more.
Because she was like 8, right? 8 and a half.
Yeah. Oh, she would have been 9 at that point.
Okay.
And so she would ask, at first it was a little hard for her. I remember he's in his wheelchair and we go to the Austin Zoo because that was her fun activity. And so she got upset because he's in a wheelchair and she doesn't have a stroller and there's no cart. And it's just about affection or attention and just trying to deal with them being treated differently because it happened before. And so I just said, James, stay with Brock. And I pulled her down a little ways and we just sat down and I said, Jenna, like, you can't act that way towards Brock. And she's like, well, he, and I said, trust me, he would rather you be in the wheelchair and him running around.
Yes.
And I'm like, and she wasn't talking. And I was like, you're not talking to him. And she's like, well, he can't do anything. I'm waiting for him to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, I don't know if he's going to get better. You have got to start talking to him. Well, what am I supposed to do? I said, you know what? You watch TV beside him.
Yeah.
And they just gotten an iPad as a present from a friend. And I was like, you can play games with him.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, but you need to start talking to him because I don't know how he's going to do. So that was kind of a rough conversation.
Right. And do you think that kind of opened her eyes in the best that a 9-year-old's eyes could be opened?
That's when she started interacting with him more. And then he got normal. And then when he got bad. I think she just was waiting for him to get better again.
Yeah. What did the process look like for you guys? Because we are going to talk more about DIPG in a little bit, like specifically what that even means and what that is. So we will get to that in a minute. But the one thing I'll go ahead and say right now is that with DIPG, it is terminal on diagnosis. Yes. I read like there's only 0% survival rate, right? Mm-hmm. There's no cure. There's not really any great treatment. Like you find out you have it and it's, you know, that you or your child is going to die. And so that is not necessarily usually the case with all cancers, right? Like with most cancers, you have some hope, chance. Sometimes a lot of hope, sometimes a little, but usually some hope. But you guys didn't have that, short of a miracle, which I'm sure you prayed for. But mostly this is what you're expecting to happen. So what did the 7 months look like of you guys kind of bracing yourselves for this? Like, is there even a way to prepare and brace yourself, or do you just not even go there and you just live in the moment, similar to kind of what you're telling Brock and Jenna to do?
So it's one of those where you're just in a fight mode. And so it was like, James, his job was to research. Mm-hmm. And so he literally called the top 50 pediatric hospitals to see what they had, mm-hmm. and what was available. And I was focused on, let's get through the radiation and then let's have fun. So every day was about having fun. So I would be in the moment and have fun with them, but it's hard because you're having fun, you're looking at your kid, and then the whole time you're thinking that you're lying to them. Mm-hmm. But you don't want them to know.
Yeah.
And if they have hope and they've got the spirit, then maybe they can buy more time. We just got to buy time to find a treatment for him to be the one. And so, you know, then they would go to bed. I would go in the closet and cry.
Yeah. I was going to ask that.
And that was literally like
at night when he goes to bed.
Every day. Because every day you were letting your kid down. Mm-hmm. And every day you didn't know how many more you have left. And every day you were grieving. So, but you were never going to let your kids see that.
Right.
And it's also a conflict because I didn't want to lie to them. And so, you know, we are faithful. We believe in God, and I'm very, very, very grateful. We're Church of Christ, which is, I was raised Catholic, and it's Church of Christ is you just read the Bible, you believe, you know, you research the Bible, you study the Bible, you follow the Bible, and there's just no traditions there in a Catholic church. So it was easier for me to go there than the James to become Catholic. And so then I'm sitting there going, okay, so is Jenna going to hate me when he dies? Because I mean, my job is to protect him and I didn't do it. Mm-hmm. So is she going to lose faith in me?
Right.
Is she going to lose faith in God?
Yeah.
And is she going to think everything I've ever told her was a lie?
Right.
And so I'm dealing with that at the same time. It's like, I got to take care of Brock and I got to take care
of Jenna.
And I couldn't let my mind go, what was it going to look like when he started progressing? Because mm-hmm. that's the scariest thing in the entire world. Mm-hmm. And so I had to wait till that happened for me to even go there.
So until he started progressing, until the actual progression started, did he mostly, in a lot of ways, still seem like his normal self?
Yeah, he got back and his personality changed a little. I mean, you're going through radiation, so it changes a little.
Right.
But he got back to doing all the things. He would actually go to school. He started second grade and we'd have him go when he wanted. But then mm-hmm. he also had doctor's appointments and we also took trips. And so, I mean, he was doing really good. And then we knew it was starting to progress because... So like take a step back is that they get to do a Make-A-Wish trip.
Right.
So we were trying to decide, do we do Disney World because they have a village, which is mm-hmm. amazing. That's Make-A-Wish and that's all designed for kids with disabilities. But he wanted to go stay at Legoland. Love Legos. Like every day we did Legos. He would get the pieces and I would put them together. And mm-hmm. It was a Legothon. It was just him and I. Nobody else was able to help him.
Right.
Grandma wanted to and he was like, no. And so, so I'm just trying to decide. And they kept telling me, you really should do the village. And mm-hmm. I kept thinking, but this is Brock's trip. Right. I want to do what he wants to do. Well, we go out to Rockinar and Round Rock, a water park, and we show up and they have one of those big playscapes in the water. Mm-hmm. Well, he wants to go down the slides, but he's walking, but still needs help. And I don't want him going down the slide right. and hurting himself. And they wouldn't let adults go.
Okay.
So he starts to get upset. My friend's going to go get a manager to approve it. But I realize, no, this is not good. And so I just left Jenna with our friends mm-hmm. and Brock and I get in the car and he's just devastated yeah. because it was a reality that everyone can do it and he can't.
Right.
And so we're sitting there in the car and I'm in the front seat and he's behind me in the back seat. And I said, you know what, Brock, I really think that we need to do Legoland. I mean, we need to do the village because it's going to have tons of fun stuff and we're not going to have an instance like this where you can't right. do something and right. it's going to be a lot of fun, but we'll go to Legoland for the day and I'll take you to Legoland another time as well. Mm-hmm. And he was like, okay, like he got it.
Yeah.
So our whole goal, I mean, he wanted to go to Legoland, stay at the hotel. So I planned it in October because we knew like you got to plan this stuff right away. You can't delay yeah. anything.
Right.
And so the week that we're supposed to go, he starts throwing up.
Okay.
And so James is like, we can't go. We got to see what trial we're going to get him into.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. If we don't take him now, we're never taking him. And I'm not living with that.
Right.
And I'm not telling him no. I told him no one time. It was like day one of radiation. He had wanted to go to Chuck E. Cheese. And James was all worried about his immune system mm-hmm. and going. And so I told Brock no. And he was just devastated. And then that night I said, James, I don't care if he gets sick and it kills him. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know how much time and I'm not going to have him upset. So from then yeah. on, James knew. So I just said, we're going to Legoland.
Yeah.
And so he's like, well, let's just go to the doctor first and ask. Fine. So we go to the doctor. So she's checking him out. Well, he's passing all the tests mm-hmm. and we're leaving in like 2 days. And so I was like, so is it okay? And I'm shaking my head. Yes. Is it okay for us to go to Legoland that we have planned to stay at the right. hotel? And she's like, oh yes, go. Thank you. I was like, you don't know, but you were the deciding factor. Yeah. James didn't want to go. And she's like, no, go. But as soon as we got back, within a day, he started walking drunk, is what they call it, a drunk walk. And I mean, it's just so fast. Yeah. So it was starting to come on. I know it was pure will. And when we were sitting at Legoland, it was just him and I at a table eating dinner. I don't know where everyone else was. And he's like, Mommy, people just don't know what it's like to have cancer in your brain. And I said, well, what's it like? And he said, it's like cobwebs. Mm-hmm. And so he felt it coming yeah, back. He right. knew.
Yeah.
And he was going to enjoy Legoland.
Yeah.
And we got there. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, here it came.
Yeah. Was it, you know, whether it was Legoland or Rockinar or the Austin Zoo or any, it sounds like you did an excellent job during those 7 months of making sure that lots of fun was had and memories were made. Was it at all possible? Did you enjoy it? Were you able to be happy and to have fun in the moment and to enjoy it in light of the bigger picture, or was nothing really fun?
Oh, no. We had a lot of fun. My favorite memory is when we went to Schlitterbahn. There's an organization, Sunshine Kids, that tries to bring joy to kids that are sick. They had a day where you could go to Schlitterbahn. And that was my absolute favorite. That was in September. Mm-hmm. And that was when he was the best of the best. And we spent the whole day and he was able to do all the slides to the point he would take off without me.
Okay.
And I remember sitting there feeling so free mm-hmm. because he was having so much fun and I didn't have to worry about him.
Right.
He was just being a kid mm-hmm. and it was awesome. I mean, everything was fun. So it's like, what is it called? Where you like segment things?
Right. Like compartmentalize.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Thank you. My mind's not always the yeah. best anymore. But I have a compartmentalize so I can enjoy the moment.
Yeah.
The only time, another cool thing we had planned, I turned 40 during his battle. And so we had planned like the January, he got diagnosed in May. So that January, my family, we were all doing a cruise in August.
Okay.
And so then when he got diagnosed, we had family, friends now join us as well. So the cruise was, I love cruises and we were having so much fun. So the only hard day was on my actual birthday mm-hmm. because I knew it was going to be my last birthday with them.
Yeah.
But the cruise itself was fun. Brock does it now.
Right.
And so I had joy seeing my kids have joy.
Yeah.
But that's how it's always been. My kids are happy, I'm happy.
Right.
I mean, it's just how
it is. That's just how it is. I agree completely.
So I could definitely find the joy. And honestly, like, I want to have fun. So it was like, I was playing in the step just as much for me.
So, right. Well, like, you let's go be able play. To have the memories too.
Yes. And you got to escape this reality you're in, right? Yep. I mean, it's escaping, but the therapist said that's okay as long as you know you're doing it.
Right. I mean, what else would you do?
I mean, as long as you know you're escaping, it's okay. If you don't know you're escaping, then you got a problem.
Right. Do you feel like you guys were, I mean, it was so fast. Like, it seems like sometimes, and my own mom actually has cancer right now. So I know a little bit about what some of the stuff that you walked through felt like. But I know for my mom, she's now had ovarian cancer for a little over 2 years. And she definitely has a new norm, right? So she's going to the doctor right now she has to go every 3 weeks for blood work. And she's got a million trillion supplements that she takes, all of these things that are so drastically, completely different than pre-cancer. You know, like, her life looks completely different. But in some ways, she has settled into a new norm. Like, this is just the new norm. So, but you guys, it was so fast. Do you feel like you've settled into, was your new norm just kind of memory making? Like, that is our new norm, is that we do fun stuff and create memories. And did it start to feel like a new norm? Or was it so fast that it always just felt like being jolted out of reality into a strange world?
There is definitely no time for a new norm.
Yeah.
Because you're more trying to survive.
Right.
And you're like happy, scared, afraid, trying to manage so many different emotions and family members that there is no norm, because every day is different. And the awful thing about DIPG is it's a daily roller coaster. So he could be fine 1 hour and then bad the next hour and then good again. So you don't have a norm. It's after he dies that you have to figure out what your new norm is.
Right.
So there's like pre-cancer, after death.
Right. So I don't know how, I mean, you're doing great. Like, I know this is all difficult. Like, none of it is not difficult to talk about. I feel like this question could be difficult, but I did ask you ahead of time.
Oh yeah, you can ask me anything. I'm fine.
The day he died, what was that day? Like, can you walk us through a little bit about what that was like?
That's what was the crazy part. So within like a week, Brock's not able to walk again. Then their speech starts getting slurred. So now he can't talk. A friend had recommended that I have a book where he could point to pictures. He and I had a really good guessing game. So I'd be like, okay, is it a room? Is it a food? Like, I can narrow it down. We got really good at it. And so we were doing a trial drug that I thought was helping, because I'd mentioned how he would say cobwebs. Mm-hmm. So every morning I would say, are you better today, worse today, same today? And he could shake his head yes or no. Mm-hmm. And so he finally said he was better. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And so I said, do you have less cobwebs? And he shook his head yes. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So here comes, so they want to put your kid on hospice as soon as they're diagnosed. Right. Hospice is different for kids. For adults, if you go on hospice, you have to stop treatment. Mm-hmm. But kids, you still continue.
Okay.
And I was like, no, I mean, hospice still has negative connotation. I don't want it. Well, as soon as he was diagnosed, I was like, let's have hospice, because I had no idea what I was going to expect. And there comes time, I mean, you don't want to go to the doctor all the time.
Like, right.
I'd rather them come to my house.
Yeah.
So here comes hospice doctor in house call with the nurses. And so, I mean, he's now starting to have like black on his skin. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember, it had to do with his platelets and stuff. And so, you know, so I'm wanting to know, like, what I'm seeing, is this causing him pain? I just need him. I mean, I'm just trying to manage him. And now I'm thinking the drugs are doing better. And so our idea was to go and get him IV fluids just to pump him up.
Yeah.
And so that way he, because
make him feel better.
I'm thinking he's got 2 more weeks.
Yeah.
The doctors are thinking 2 more weeks. And I'm like, if we can just, this 2 weeks, a lot can happen. You know, this drug is working. All right. So we decided to take him to the hospital. So we go, I mean, he's smiling. We're watching a movie. The hospice nurses happen to be, there's only like 2 of them. There's not 10.
Yeah.
Pediatric, there's not. So they come, I mean, he's flirting. I mean, now he can't talk, but he could smile and look cute and flirt, because he knew he was cute. And of course, the nurses just loved him.
Right.
And so that was the time that I finally had the conversation with the doctor that I would allow myself, because I knew I had to prepare.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to prepare because I didn't want to give up hope. And I still wasn't giving up hope, but I knew I was at a very breaking point. And so
I said, I need to know what it's like. And so is it going to be fast or is it going to be slow? And she said, it's one or the other. We don't know with this disease. So it could be gradual, like he's on, and then you have a couple more weeks, or it could be like fast. I said, mm-hmm. like an aneurysm. And she's like, yeah, but it's not. And I was like, I understand. Yes. I'm talking about a concept here. So she said, yes. And I remember thinking in my head, I sure hope it's fast.
I was going to ask you, which mm-hmm. did you prefer?
I wanted that in my head because I don't want to see my kid right. suffer.
Right.
Okay. So we get home and I scheduled a massage because I've got my kid IV fluids. We're ready for battle. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get a massage because I'm a mess. This is going to relax me for an hour. And then I'm going to be ready for battle.
Full on battle mode.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. I go and I ask him, is it okay? Because it was always me. I mean, I felt sorry for my husband, but he didn't want daddy. And so I said, is it okay if I go get a massage and daddy's going to stay with you and I'm going to be right back? And he said, yes. And so when I'm on my way back, he started having, they're not seizure, brain strokes. And so he would lock up. So his okay. arms and his legs would just lock up. And it was very scary to watch. And so the nurse would come and she asked him one time afterwards, literally, thank you, God, she asked. And she said, are you scared? No. Do you know what's going on? Yes. Can you hear your mommy? Yes. And so I knew to talk to him. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on my way home. I said, hey, I'm on my way home. And he's like, hey, he's having one of those seizures and he hasn't come out of it yet. And I said, well, how long has it been going on? And he said, well, about an hour. And I was like, I'll be there. So at this point, we call hospice again. And it was some weird older lady, because the kid ones don't work at night. They're not on call. And so at this point, he's not coming out of it. And so we get morphine. So, you know, it's getting bad now. So we got to give him morphine right. and his heart's racing. We're calling the doctor. And so they said, give him more morphine. And then he came out of it.
Okay.
And so, I got the nurse to leave as quickly as I could. Because I don't want her in our space.
Right.
So she left. Yeah. And then, I mean, it's now like 3 a.m. or probably 2 a.m. And so he had made it through the night. They were all confident in that and that we should all get some rest because we don't know what tomorrow will bring. I was starting to really freak out. At that point, because I'm like, this is like above my pay grade. And now I'm giving this kid morphine. And so James is like, well, we can take him to the hospital, but we know he doesn't like it there. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we had the nurse come out. So she left and the doctor's going to call us every hour and check in on us. Okay. And
he's just in his bedroom.
We've gone to the guest room. That's where Brock and I were sleeping because okay. it was queen size bed. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't leave my side. Yeah. And at that point, water was very freeing for him. He and I would take a bath. He would just lay on me in the bathtub and we would sit there for an hour.
Right.
And then he would motion when he was ready to get out and I would do 5 of those a day. It didn't matter. Whatever he wanted, yes. we were there. Yeah. And so, James came back up and so I could hear, so I'm laying there and I can hear him and I can just hear him breathing. And it's just the awful feeling because there's like the space between breaths. And so I'm exhausted. It's emotional. I'm hearing him. And James is saying, go to sleep. And so I just turned and I'm trying to escape. And I fell asleep. Mm-hmm. And then James comes in and I didn't hear anything. And I couldn't look. And I said, how is he? And James just said, he's gone.
Oh my gosh.
And I literally fell out of the bed and started gagging and ran to the toilet and was just gagging and trying to throw up. And I'm like hurdled in the fetal position and just moaning. Literally a part of me died. Like, I mean, no joke. Afterwards, I ended up going to a wellness doctor because then my body is just traumatized and I'm thinking, okay, if I'm stuck here without him and I've got this daughter who's looking to me, I have to get healthy. Like yeah. if I'm stuck here, I gotta be healthy. And I read this book and they say, you know, in these moments you have to choose. You can go with them. And they're like, and if you think that you need to go get help.
Right.
Which I thought was funny. And then or you can exist mm-hmm. or you can live. And I've chosen to live. Like, I don't want to just exist. I've got to have joy in my life. I mean, come on, I'm only in my 40s. Like,
right.
This would be a miserable life otherwise. And I don't want to do that for Jenna. Jenna did not choose to come into this world. She did not choose for her brother to die from cancer. I owe it to her as her mother to be as good of a mother as I can be. So I went to the wellness doctor. And my blood pressure was like 70 over 40. And so, I mean, I had to do a lot to get it better. But, you know, so now here you are and he's gone. And then I'm just, and so it's like in that moment, now it's okay. He's gone. I have to shift everything to Jenna.
Yep. And I mean, and what a shift, because this has been your life for the last 7 months and you're focused and all about him.
And it's not like we had talked about what we're going to do. And so I was like, James, you know, so here we come downstairs, because she was sleeping on the couch with daddy.
Yeah.
And so, and they'd been doing that for a few months, her and daddy on the couch, and although we have all these beds, right. and Brock and I up in the guest room. And so I woke her up and I said that Brock was gone. And, you know, of course she starts crying and she wants to see him. Mm-hmm. And so she's just so adorable. So she wanted us to stay there for 2 hours in case God brought him back.
Oh.
I will forever, ever be grateful that she had us do that, because honestly, it's the last time you get to hold your son.
Right.
Because once they go to the funeral home, you can see him. But I mean, all I wanted to do was crawl in the coffin with him. So we got to just hold him and hug him and rub him. And we set the timer for 2 hours.
Just your family there.
It's just James, Jenna, and I in the room. Yes. A family friend had come over. My dad and stepmom had just left that morning because they had to go do a few things and were coming back. I mean, everybody is shocked. I mean, he was smiling. Earlier that day, he was flirting with the nurses. Right. What do you mean? And so, but I didn't want anyone else in there. So my good friend Connie, she was downstairs, and my dad and stepmom would come back. But Jenna, so this odd lady. So of course she has to come back. Now we got to call the funeral home, and so we're like, we're going to stay here until they're ready for us. And so she's telling me how James needs to carry my son down. I'm like, no, I'm going to.
Yeah.
Just let me know when you're ready. Okay. I'll let you know. Okay.
Does she just feel like you are going to just crumble? Like you're not
I guess.
Be able
I don't
to,
know. Yeah. And so that she, so here she comes up. Okay. They're ready. Okay. Well, it's been 2 hours. So my son's starting to get a little hard now. Mm-hmm. And so I'm walking down the stairs and here's the funeral guys. And they look at me and they're like, oh, you're bringing him down. We need to go get the gurney.
What? You're like, what did you think I was going to do?
No, but she said they're ready. Like, I've been waiting for her to tell you when they're ready and they're not ready.
Oh my gosh.
And so now I'm like, well, I'm not carrying him back upstairs. I mean, he's now kind of like stiff and straight.
Right.
And so goodness. I'm trying to find a couch to prop him on me.
Oh my goodness. It's like not, I mean, you would not picture any of this. Oh, this particular moment is certainly not the way you would picture this happening.
And I'm trying like to make sure that this isn't traumatizing my daughter.
Right.
You're just sitting around, what? So here they come with the gurney. And so, you know, they lay him down, they seat buckle him in, and, you know, Jenna's just right by me and I'm by me. And they're just looking at us because, I mean, obviously this doesn't happen a lot and it's right. A kid. And so they're buckling him in. And so I'm like, oh yeah, Jenna, this is to keep him safe and secure. And she's like, okay. And they put a white sheet over him and I'm just like, okay. And I'm looking at Jenna and she's doing okay. Well, they had this pretty, which I thought was a blanket. Oh, no. It's one that zips over him and it's floral. Gosh. And they do that. And so then Jenna looks at me and she goes, well, I guess God can't bring him back now.
Oh.
And I was like, no, sweetie, he can't bring him back now. I mean, it was just the wildest. It was the wildest thing.
And your how is your husband handling all of these moments that you're talking about right now?
Like, he would follow our lead. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really hard because a lot of the tension always goes to the mom and the dads are forgotten and they're struggling with so much.
Right.
And the dad's job is to fix things and to take care of his family and provide for his family. So not being able to do that hits really hard.
Right.
So I would have to remind people, like, check in on James.
Yeah.
Check in on James because he's struggling. He's just not necessarily going to show it as much.
Right. And he's struggling with different things probably.
Absolutely.
Too. Okay. Well, so speaking of James, one big question I had for you when you and I were kind of texting back and forth, I know, I guess maybe it's somewhat common knowledge that typically a lot of times marriages don't survive the loss of a child. And then you reminded me, or I guess I didn't even know that your husband was a police officer and there's also a pretty high divorce rate amongst that. And yet you guys survived and are thriving. I think. I actually don't even know that. I guess I just kind of poured words into your mouth. But yeah. You certainly have, your marriage has survived. Yeah. And I asked you kind of in a text why or how. And you said that, I kind of wrote it down, in fact, that it's all about how you grieve and the choices that you make. And so can you elaborate on that and tell me kind of why you think you guys were able to beat the odds and why your marriage has survived?
I think James and I have different strengths, and because we just fit into these roles of him, the researcher, and me, the caregiver, we work together during this. And I think that during the battle is when maybe people could fight and see things differently. And we just respected what each other's one role. Like, I had complete faith that there was going to be a solution. James was going to find it. And right. I wasn't prepared to find it. Uh-huh. And he knew I was the best caregiver for Brock and respected and wasn't upset if Brock didn't want him because he knew Brock still loved him. Right.
Right.
And so, and of course he loved his dad and he wanted his dad, but at night he was sleeping by me, right. You know, it's just those kind of little things. Yeah. But, so it was like during our battle, we got into a good groove, and we've always known with, we just handle things differently. So when it came to grieving, we just, it's like, if he's having a bad day, I know it. So I might get a little short with him and say, hey, quit your attitude or go away, mm-hmm. and then he'll go away, mm-hmm. or I'll go away.
Yeah.
But it's not, I think sometimes maybe couples try to tell the person how to grieve and don't respect that they might grieve differently.
Right.
And so we just knew, and I think at the a premise of both of us is that we believe in the sanctity of marriage, and there isn't anything worse than we could do to our daughter than for us to separate, because right. she's needing us more than ever. Yeah. And so we needed to be unified. And then it absolutely helped that when Brock first, so James always wanted three kids, mm-hmm. but he would work weekends every other month. And I was like, I'm literally going to lose a kid if I have three. Right. I need to be able to hold one hand on each kid.
Right.
So it wasn't that I didn't want more kids. I just knew my limitations. Mm-hmm. And so when Brock got diagnosed, of course, the conversation comes up. What are we going to have more kids? What are we going to do? So I told him, I don't want one kid. I want three. Brock is going to make this.
Right.
As soon as he's a little bit healthier, we're just going to start trying. Right. And we're going to have our new life.
Yeah.
It just happened so fast. And the kids were actually asking for a sibling. Mm-hmm. And Brock had said he wanted another sister. He didn't want a brother because he'd have to share his toys.
His Legos and his Batman.
And so after Brock died, that was another, Jenna didn't come out of the room for 2 days. She wouldn't let anyone come in. She wouldn't come out. We had to watch Heaven Is For Real, Miracles From Heaven. I was very glad she relied on her faith. And she actually told me, Brock's fine. He's in heaven. Yeah. And I said, yeah, you're right. It's mm-hmm. us. You have to figure this out. But she got real desperate for us to have another kid.
Okay.
Because she was like, I have to have a sibling. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a replacement. Blair in no way can ever replace Brock. It's just that if you're the only child, you're used to it and that's what you know and you're good with it. But I think when you have siblings and all right. of a sudden you don't, you're just lost with your own identity.
Right.
And she's such a good big sister and she needs to
she
have
wants to big sister somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, of course we haven't had the birds and bees conversation and now I'm not going to if she's telling me to get pregnant.
Right.
So it'd be funny, you know, every day, Mom, are you pregnant? Mom, are you pregnant? And I'd be like, Jenna, it can only be one time of the month and I'll let you know. And don't you ask me until
about that right now.
I know. And I'll be like, and don't ask me. And so then, so her and James would walk the dog every night. And so James every night, is Mommy pregnant? No. She would ask him and not me because she wasn't allowed to ask me.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It was funny. It was cute. So I think the other thing that's helped our marriage is because we have another child and that brings its own new joy.
Right.
And so it's weird though. It's like we have, James and I will talk about, we have two separate lives that never meet. Mm-hmm. We had a life with Jenna and Brock and now we have a life with Jenna and Blair.
Yeah.
It's a very weird, surreal thing.
Right.
And so that's why it's like finding your new norm. What is this like?
Right. So as far as, cause you said a second ago that, that you felt like it was helpful that with you and James, neither of you kind of had this expectation of how the other one ought to grieve.
Right.
Did y'all's grieving processes look very different from each other?
James is just going to be more quiet. He's going to get on the computer. Now, he did go on a shopping spree right after Brock died, and I took a lot of things back. Mm-hmm. So that was part of his grieving.
Okay. A little retail therapy.
Yeah. You know, okay. I mean, he's such the girl, and I'm such the boy when it comes to that. Like, I don't like to shop. Mm-hmm. I don't like any of that stuff. He likes to research for cars. I don't care what car I drive. Just give me something that moves.
Give me something with wheels.
Yeah. So that was part of his grieving. And he just got quiet and he'll have his moments. My grieving is post on our Facebook page and I can express my thoughts.
Yes, and I've read through some of that. since I've, you know, gotten to know you a little bit.
And then I think both of us, the way that we grieve the same is through what we do, which we'll get into later, of just the raising money and helping to change this for other kids. Like, that is an absolute grieving process for both of us. Mm-hmm. And we're completely unified. We do it in different ways for the fundraising, but he and I do that. That is our mission. There are absolute other couples where it's like one person is strong, another person doesn't really want to. But with us, it's like, no, we're doing this. That's been a healthy outlet for us, mm-hmm. too. We both want to share his legacy.
And I'm sure have good come from something that was so...
The money that we raise, very confident that we're going to find a cure. Because when Brock was battling, they told me a cure would be found during my lifetime. And doctors are now saying 3 to 5 years.
For this particular type of cancer.
Yes, for DIPG. Okay. It'll be all brain cancers and probably many more.
Okay.
And so we know we're doing good. And we were both in sync. Like, some families, they want to raise money to help other families battling.
Yeah.
But I'm like, but the best thing I can do for a kid is give them treatment and cure, because that's all Brock cared about. I mean, he wanted to be better. Right. I mean, he told me, make Brock better. Well, there you go. Simple enough. Like, can we say it any easier?
Yep.
And so that's what pushes us, is that we're going to make other kids better so parents don't feel the same pain and they don't have to know. Their lives will forever be changed. There will be a part of them that grieves. They're going to grieve for things that they lost because it's not going to be the life that they had planned. Mm-hmm. And their child, because going through treatment, will have other issues, but they will not lose their kid.
Right.
And that's what we're going to help them with.
Yeah. Well, let's move a little bit into that. I bet if I were to sit here and count, I bet I have 15 other questions for you that had to do with Brock and the diagnosis and what the grieving process looked like. But I really want to have time to talk about DIPG itself and about what you guys are doing. And so we're going to move on to that. But the questions I wanted to ask you, I feel like are really good. And so I might even potentially...
You say so yourself.
Like, I'm just such a good question after. So I might even do something where I still maybe email you some of these questions and have you write them. And maybe I could even post that in a blog post.
Sure.
Kind of like an after the episode, little like bonus thing.
I do say English is my second language, mm-hmm. although I don't have a first one. So you might have to edit my answer.
That's totally fine. Totally fine. I can do that. So let's talk a little bit about DIPG. And we already have some, obviously, talked about it. But obviously you're going to already know these things because you're much more researched on this topic.
Live and breathe it.
You live and breathe it. But as I was kind of researching a little bit, I found some things that I thought were crazy, and I'm sure that you find horrifying. But I read that that a child that's diagnosed with DIPG today has the exact same prognosis as a child 40 years ago.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, nothing good has happened on that front in a whole lot of years. It said that Neil Armstrong's daughter died of this disease in 1962.
Muffy.
Yes.
They had a movie, if y'all saw the movie that came out last year, and they kept referencing, you know, her dying, but they mm-hmm. never said the words. She had DIPG.
Okay. And the standard treatment has not changed any for it mm-hmm. since her, mm-hmm. which I don't know for sure, but I don't feel like that is the case with a lot of other cancers, right? Correct. Like, advances mm-hmm. have been made. And many uh-huh. others, mm-hmm. but not in this particular one.
Yes.
I read that the federal government gives less than 1% to pediatric brain cancer each year and only 250,000 to DIPG. Uh-huh. So with all of these things I'm saying, why? Like, why is that the case?
So it's kind of crazy. Medicine's about money. And there's a lot more adults, and a lot more adults are going to get cancer. So if they want to make money,
they need to treat adults, not kids.
Right.
It's just the simple truth. Mm-hmm. And then if the, and they actually lose money on kids. And so then it comes down to, if we're going to dedicate towards kids, we're losing money. Where are we going to dedicate money towards? Their philosophies, or we're going to go after the easiest thing so we can have results to show with our money.
Yeah.
So we'll look at a couple of different ways before we get into the government and more money. Let's talk about why treatment hasn't changed.
Okay.
So the problem is because it's kids. Mm-hmm. And so, rightly so, they're worried about the quality of life for a child.
Right.
My outlook is, you just told me my kid is dying. Mm-hmm. And, he doesn't have much time. So I want to try whatever I can to make this work and find a cure. The FDA only since 2011 approved biopsies on his tumor.
Okay.
Because of where it's located, they were concerned that they would kill the kid upon biopsy.
Okay.
You're sticking a catheter in the brainstem. And so, again, it's high value real estate. So the only reason they even approved it is because France started doing it. And if France does it, then the U.S. is going to do it.
Okay.
So fortunately, one of my favorite doctors, who've already mentioned, Dr. Karen, he was a huge advocate. And there were other doctors and other parents and advocacy groups that were saying, you've got to let us do biopsies, because we had to get the research. And so what was happening before then is these kids were getting chemotherapy for adult cancers. Well, one thing we know is kid cancers are not the same as adult cancers. Mm-hmm. And this is like no other cancer. And so they were treating these kids, and all they were doing is getting them sick. I mean, it was never going to help.
Right.
And because it of its location, it's protected by the brain barrier. So now you've got this obstacle of getting drugs across the brain barrier.
Okay.
And so you've got this obstacle to get across the brain barrier. You've got this obstacle that we don't even know what we're dealing with. And so it's hard to have advances. Where if it's a cancer in the blood, mm-hmm. they can do biopsies. They get, you know, they can test it. And so right. they can attack more things. Then you have an issue because of where it's located. If you try these drugs and it inflames, it's going to kill the kid. So you got to make sure whatever you do, you can control.
Okay.
Then you get that on top of there's not funding. So one of the things they found out about this tumor is that it's heterogeneous. So what that means is that this tumor is not the same throughout.
Okay.
Only 7% of the tumor is the same.
Okay.
93% is different.
Interesting.
So what happens is the radiation helps one aspect of the tumor, mm-hmm. kind of knocks it down, sits at bay. So what happens? A different aspect of the tumor starts taking off.
Okay.
And so what they've actually found now that they've been able to do biopsies is that kids that have a biopsy at diagnosis and then their tumor is donated at death, mm-hmm. the tumor is actually transformed. It's different because a different aspect takes okay, over.
Right.
So you're dealing with a true monster.
Yes.
And so then the government, how they look at it is that we're only going to give a little small portion. So we want it to be safe where we can have results, which is the most insane thing ever, because you're throwing money after cancers that have a cure and this one has nothing.
Right.
So what's happened is that, because there was the foundation, The Cure Starts Now, which is who we raised for. It started from another family 10 years ago. And so they've really been building this focus. And then now you've got other families like myself, and then you've got other nonprofits. They formed it in their kids' honor, and we're now funneling money for research. So over time, doctors have now realized, okay, I can research this because there is money for it.
Right.
If they're going through the hospital and there's a fundraiser, 60% of it's going to go into hospital operating expenses. The doctor's never really going to see it. So they have trouble even really being able to do their true research and finish okay. it if they're working through the hospital. So some hospitals don't necessarily like us because we don't give it to the hospital. We give it to the doctor, and it has to be used okay. for the trial.
Okay.
And so that's what's kind of helped with these advancements. And so, excitingly, the government, first time ever, they just approved, I announced it on Facebook, like I think 2 months ago now, that they approved a second phase of a trial that's showing some promising results. And it was $459,000. So we got a little bit more.
Okay.
But to put this in perspective, the worst cancer, the only pediatric cancer that terminal the day they're diagnosed, the government gives $459,000 versus breast cancer, mm-hmm. $520 million.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Wow.
So I won't even go there, but I just want to put it in perspective. Yeah. So it's a total grassroots movement that people are getting on board. The other problem is that the FDA did not want kids to do trials until progression, until the tumor starts growing, because they're like, you know, they're doing good. Let them have a quality of life. We don't know how they're going to react.
Right.
But the problem is when it starts progressing, I mean, I thought I had 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I was glad to have six.
Right.
And so now it's been a lot. I mean, there's so many exciting things that have been happening. So now since Brock's death, the FDA has now allowed that kids can get trials at diagnosis. Sometimes it's they're trying drugs at the same time as radiation, or maybe it's right after radiation. And what they have agreed to is maybe two kids can try it.
Okay.
They make sure when a trial starts phase one, it's really only testing toxicity levels. You're not even sure if it's going to work or not. It's more like, can the body handle it? And so if they know the two kids are okay, then they allow more kids to open it up. Because on the standard trial, it would open it up to 20 kids. Well, they didn't want 20 kids at risk.
Right.
Not that many would join that fast anyways, but that's kind of like meeting the middle. And then once they know, then they can open it up to other kids.
Okay.
So what happened with James and I was that during our battle, the same friend who found you,
yes,
found the cure starts now.
Okay.
And because she Googled DIPG and it came up. And so when they were doing monthly fundraisers for Brock, which was so cute in itself, because we kicked it off with a Round Rock Express game. They let him throw the first pitch.
Aww.
And so Susan said, you know, Brock, you know, do you want people to come and watch you? And he's like, you know, yes. And then she's like, well, do you want us to like all wear shirts and support? And he's like, yes. And she's like, well, what do you want on it? And he's like, Batman. And then and she's like, well, do you want to be like Team Brock or Brock Strong? Is there a name? And he's like, Team Brock. And so her son designed the logo.
Oh, cool.
And then we show it to Brock. Well, it said Brock Strong.
Oh.
And he was like, no.
That's Team Brock. For.
And changed it. Yeah. So when they were doing the monthly fundraisers to help us financially, then we, you know, companies want to sponsor a 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
Families will give to people. So we were raising money for the Cure Starts Now at the same time and felt like we were doing some good. So that's how we got introduced to them. So after Brock died, my friend Connie said, you know, are you wanting to do a fundraiser? We were like, yeah, but I mean, would people really want to do it? And so that was a great outlet for James and I. And so we decided the Cure Starts Now because we were the 23rd chapter.
Okay.
And when I say chapter, that's family. So mm-hmm. usually what happens is like in our situation, we form a chapter in honor of our son right. in our area.
Right.
And so we're the Austin Round Rock chapter.
Okay.
And so then the money that's raised, it's very low overhead because it's all parents raising it.
Right.
And so it's 97% funds research.
Okay.
And it's really cool because the doctors request grants. They just submit all these grants. It goes in front of a medical advisory board. They sift through it. They kind of do a green, red, yellow, like green. You know, we're really excited about this. We think there's some potential. Red is like, I don't even know why they submitted it. They just want to do their own research project and hope we'd give them money.
Right.
Yellow is like, they're trying, but we're not really sure if this is a good idea. Let's research some more.
Okay. Right.
And then they kind of come up with their list. And then we have a chapter meeting
mm-hmm.
and we vote where the money goes.
Okay.
So we liked all that
very
input.
Much. Oh, in yeah. Control.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, and so the criteria is that they have to try something new. We're mm-hmm. not going to throw bad money after bad money. We don't have money to waste.
Right.
They have to share their information. So every other year, every 2 years, there's a DIPG symposium.
Okay.
So it's actually this year in Australia. In Sydney, because Australia, their government is full focused towards brain cancer. They have agreed to give $10 million per year for the next 10 years, all about brain cancer.
Okay.
And they're having huge progress. So we want to show them that we support the government. We appreciate it. We appreciate these doctors who quite a few of them have grants.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're having it there.
Okay.
And so they actually get up and they report their results for the past 2 years. And then they also collaborate. So they'll have separate meetings of this is the next thing I want to try. What do you think? The other cool thing is that like
if a kid's tumor was donated, and maybe that doctor will share some of those cell lines with another doctor who's doing some research. So they're absolutely collaborating.
Okay.
And all these doctors, there's now 80 plus that are dedicated because they know they can get the money. They are committed. Every time you ask the doctor, like, why? I mean, it's kind of interesting. It's usually because they were a resident and they were with the doctor who just told me
right.
my kid was dying. Yes. And they're sitting there going, like, are you kidding me? Like, did we really just tell this family this? Like,
right.
I don't even get this.
Yeah.
And that's usually what motivates them.
Okay. That's interesting. Cause I was actually wondering that is what.
Yeah. It's usually what's happened because these doctors don't like telling me any more than I like hearing it.
Right.
And they don't feel good about saying, I'm sorry, there's nothing else I can do. I mean, mm-hmm. they grieve along with us. Not the same, but they're, I mean, it's got to take
still
a toll
not
on
fun.
Them.
Yeah.
No, they went into medicine to help, not to say sorry. And so we just really believe in what they're doing. So some cool things. So the Cure Starts Now had time and time again, you know, meet with NIH, the National Health Organization, the one that handles all the funding.
Yeah.
And so they would ask him, like, we need a registry. Oh, yeah, we're going to do it. Oh, yeah, we're going to do it. They've been saying this for 3 years.
Okay.
Well, we just did it.
Okay.
And so what it is like a parent agrees, we did, that we want to be a part of the registry. So we just filled out the information. Well, they go to the hospital and they get the slides. They get the scans. They get the biopsy. They get the questions that they asked us.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this, the same consistent information for every single kid. Because what happens is like one hospital cares about one part of information. Another
right.
hospital cares about another part. But now we're getting all those parts consistently for every kid because we don't know what information the researchers are going to want.
Right.
There's now over 1,500 files.
Okay.
So it's a huge database. So now they can move quicker on research. Well, you know, does it react differently in boys versus girls, mm-hmm. ages versus others? And they've got a database instead of just guessing or feeling.
Right. Which is huge.
And so now other people are coming to us to want to be able to create that for their cancers. I mean, this is the Cure Starts Now because it's about the cure.
Right.
The focus in the direction is on pediatric brain cancer because doctors believe that that's the home run cure and it's going to cure many cancers.
Yeah, I've read that.
Yes.
That is, you know, some people might think, oh, well, this is such a rare cancer. Like what, you know, why focus on this or what? I mean, obviously to the family who has experienced it, that's not what you would think. But, but I was reading on, I don't know even what, cause I got off on rabbit trails as I was researching, but I was reading that doctors think like if this cancer that is so resistant to treatment and to medicine, if this can be cured, then
all brain cancers and many more.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they've actually even found that there's a mutation in DIPG that's in all cancers.
Okay.
So that's why these doctors are focused on it because we're just wondering what it's going to unravel. A cool thing we funded last year is $2.5 million that we approved, which is really hard, but Cure Starts Now is very forward thinking. It's a virtual hospital.
Okay.
Only one of its kind.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it is that, hospital opens up a trial.
Okay.
There are 15 hospitals that are pre-vetted because they've been in the game. They're top hospitals for DIPG research. And if one of them is offering it, then the other hospitals will offer it based on what the hospital stipulates.
Okay.
And then all that information is shared in one central database real time.
Okay.
Nothing like it. And so it's awesome because there's all these HIPAA regulations, right? And doctors can't talk to doctors.
Right.
And honestly, hospitals
right.
don't like to share. But that's the arrangement and everybody works well together. And so that's really cool. So what's happening now is that trials are able to get quicker.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting the information quicker. And so that's why they're saying 3 to 5 years, we think we can figure this out because we're learning so much quicker
right.
that it's possible.
And that's a pretty commonly like accepted or a pretty common standpoint amongst DIPG doctors and researchers that 3 to 5 years.
Well, they just started saying a couple months ago.
Okay.
But you have to get in a doctor's mind.
Mm-hmm.
They are negative nanny. They're not
right.
going to be best case scenario.
Right. Yeah.
And so it was published in an article where a doctor said that from mm-hmm. a researcher, and they don't say that lightly. And then when we were at Cure Starts Now, had their annual gala, and then we had a chapter meeting. So all of us families get together.
Yeah.
And one of the head researchers was there and said the same thing. And she knows not to say that to us
right.
unless she's confident.
Right.
So there's no guarantee on anything.
Yeah.
But for them to even and feel like it's so close.
Yep.
Is really, really exciting.
Well, compared to what you were saying in the beginning when they were saying
2.5 years ago.
Lifetime.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But they're saying, I mean, it's going fast. I mean, now that you can do biopsies and you can do trials quicker and
yep.
and everyone's working together. I mean, it has to happen. There's so much money now that's unfortunately it's not the government. It's got to take personal donations. It has to be people who want to help us. You know, we always say if it's not your kid, it's going to be your grandchild. So help us figure it out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I didn't know kids got brain cancer. I had no idea. And I didn't know that they were terminal.
Right.
And so, I mean, if I had known, I would have been fighting before, right?
Yeah.
So that's why we were just like, help us in whatever capacity.
Okay. So that is a really great lead into my next question, because you just said help us in any capacity. So I have jotted down here, if there are people that are listening right now and they want to help, kind of tell us some ways and maybe even break it down. Like some people might have like limited time and limited resources. They want to help, but they don't have like a whole lot of time or a whole lot of money. Other people might have lots of time, lots of money, and everything in between. So what are some different ways or some different levels almost that you could get involved and help?
So I would say first, like go to The Cure Starts Now, and on there it has chapters. And if you click, you can see where there are chapters, because if there's one near you, it'd be great to just like, it's got the email, it's got the phone number of the directors. Mm-hmm. Like I'm the director.
Right.
And so you can reach out.
Kind of a big deal.
Oh yeah. Right. and so I'll sit there, but you can email the person or call them and say, how can I get involved? And they're going to let you know. From my perspective, anything. I mean, it can be as simple as sharing one of my posts, because
right.
now it's hitting somebody else. Like my serious goal is that each day one new person learns about DIPG. So mm-hmm. I think I met my year quota.
You for sure have.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. And so, you know, it's so part of it is you never know how it's going to impact the person.
Yeah.
And so just a simple sharing a post can reach so many people. And
mm-hmm.
It could be where you go and volunteer some time at an event they're having. We have two events. We have a golf tournament and then we have a fun run in October, which is all about the family and is my favorite.
Yeah.
It could be, you know, if they're having an event, you can donate items. Like if you're a business owner and you don't want to sponsor, maybe you can donate something for their silent auction. Right. Or, you know, you're just a person and you've got stuff you can go buy and donate it for their auction, or you can buy things on their auction, you know? So you feel like you're getting something for your money. Right.
Right.
But I mean, whenever anyone donates to my chapter, I get an email. And I mean, I email a $5 donation.
Mm-hmm.
I email a $500 donation.
Yeah.
Because it does not matter to me.
Right.
Because whatever you're giving me adds up, and 97% is going towards research, and it is helping create change. For my chapter, you know, so it's all Team Brock, right? And so, and it's kind of funny because it's like people either know Team Brock, and then The Cure Starts Now. And I'm like, no, we're the same. Like
right. Team Brock is a chapter.
Yeah, Cure Starts Now. It's just because of different events we've done.
Right.
With mine, you know, there's three things I'm trying to accomplish. I want to create awareness,
because mm-hmm.
then you can choose to look away or not. I'm hoping that you don't look away.
Right.
And then, of course, raise money to fund research. And then it's also about bringing the community together, because, I mean, my kid was in first grade. He died in second grade. His friends have no idea what just happened.
No.
And you know, just like I wanted to protect Jenna, I wanted to protect his friends. And I want them to be able to express it and to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he was diagnosed, I had Child Life go into the school because they needed to say, you know, I mean, rumors were that Brock ate chocolate and got cancer.
Right.
He fell out of a two-story building. No, he didn't. And he got cancer.
Right.
So what are these kids are going to be afraid to play on the playground, right? You got to be able to talk about it. And so when we do our fun run, we honor kids in the community that are battling or cancer free. It's not just brain cancer. And so like the last one, we brought him up and we gave him all a medal. And Brock during his battle said he wanted to kick cancer in the nuts.
I saw that on your Facebook page or somewhere.
Oh, it's
like
awesome.
The kind of thing my kids would say.
Oh, sure. And he knew, he pointed and laughed. He
yeah.
knew exactly what he was saying and thought it was so funny.
Right.
You know, we gave him a medal and it had Team Brock on the front and Halloween theme, and on the back it said kick cancer in the nuts. And one of the girls, she
she is battling leukemia and she's doing really good. And her brother, I guess, was not doing well in track. And so she wore her medal and told her mom, don't worry, Brock's here. Aww. And he did well at the race. Aww. And I was like, okay, there you go.
These are the things.
Yeah. And that's what matters. And, you know, yeah. I tell the kids, if you see me, come hug me. You know, they hug me. Yes. Like, oh. Because I know that they don't understand any more than us. So we're just trying to rally and be a resource for people and help them however we can. Mm-hmm.
And so a really great like starting place is people could just simply go to the website. The Cure Starts Now.
Yeah. So if you want to find out about DIPG, Cure Starts Now, you can kind of see what they've been doing. You can go to our Austin Round Rock page and to see Brock's story. We have another little girl in there, Caitlin. She battled in 1999 in Round Rock and we met their family after her death. And her parents didn't, you know, they didn't have Facebook then. They had no support network. Right. There was one other family that they are friends with. And so during Brock's battle is when they found out about the Cure Starts Now. And they now have joined, like they help us.
Awesome.
The husband was, or the dad was co-chair with me. He's a big golfer. So,
okay.
And he's actually golf marshal at the Forest Creek Golf Course.
Okay.
And so he was my co-chair. So like, you know, it's, and then Caitlin's sisters, older sisters are a little bit younger than me or my age. And so one of them's not helping with fun runs.
Oh,
so
cool.
Yeah. So I do have her story up there too, but the best place to go is our Facebook page and it's Team Brock Fleming.
Okay.
And, cause that's where I do my posts. Mm-hmm. So it'll either be, you know, I'm a very private person. I know you wouldn't believe it, but I actually am. And so, you know, it was very against my natural intuition, like to do a Facebook page, but I knew I needed the support. And then I thought, well, if I'm going to ask people to support me, then I need to let them in.
Right.
So I'll share different thoughts I'm going through, mm-hmm. which is therapeutic for me. I'll share different trials that are coming out. I'll share different grief articles. Cause what I found too is like, I had one person who reached out and she was like, I understand my brother better now because I think, his wife and daughter had died in a car accident. And so they didn't understand why he was acting the way he was. And when I would post, she's like, I get it now. And it kind of helped them reconnect.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't express himself.
Right.
And so, and then it's cool too, because like I'll do posts, like I did a post yesterday and I had other DIPG families or I'll have other moms or dads.
Yeah.
That'll comment about how they agree or they feel. So it's kind of an outlet. Mm-hmm. And so, so I think it touches people in different ways.
Yeah.
And that's where we'll show our events. Cause like when we kick off an event, there'll be a website for it. Okay. So that's where the events are. So that's kind of my hub.
Okay. Team Brock Fleming on
yes.
Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I have a couple more things here for you. What is funny is that I think I told you when we first talked on the phone, when we were talking about even having you on, and I was trying to kind of give you a rundown of like what to expect and how long it lasts. And I told you, you know, normally I go for like an hour and a half, but I've been trying to cut it shorter because
yes.
I feel like maybe an hour and a half is too long. And so as always with you, I had the goal of like, okay, hour and 15. And I think we're way over that.
Oh no.
But it's fine. But what's hilarious is if I had asked you all the things that I have written here,
it would have been hours.
It would have been like 2.5 hours long. So
I think we would have lost everybody.
Yeah, I mean, so we have already been like 2.5. So I think one thing I need to work on is maybe like, you know, figuring out which are the main questions to ask. But it's just, there's so many things that I want to know, that we want to know. But I do still have several things that I just have to ask you. So this is just going to have to be long. I know that Brock's birthday is next week. Is that correct?
It's Wednesday. He would have been 10.
So a week from, okay. So this
less
is Thursday,
than a week.
Less than a week away.
Yeah.
He would have been 10.
Yeah.
Which that's somewhat of a big birthday.
Yeah.
Is this any harder than,
no,
than ever?
Every birthday.
Everything is just,
yeah. I can say that. So what was really hard was, Brock's having his 7th birthday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now he's coming out of his shell and, we had friends rally. So Infamous Susan, who introduced us,
yes.
She got the APD superheroes to surprise him on his actual birthday because Batman is like the mecca.
It's
right?
Everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the day before, we had a pool party at our house. Another family friend, Yvonne, a police officer, like a group of them threw Brock this huge dinosaur party.
Okay.
And I remember he had said he wanted a dinosaur theme for that party. And then for his 8th, he wanted a shark party.
Okay.
So talk about stab your heart.
Right.
When your kid tells you for his 8th.
Yes.
And so when his 8th birthday came, We just went to my parents' house, my brothers and my mom, and I had bought like some shark plates and we were just home. And then, for the 9th, we went to San Antonio. And so, Susan asked, do you want a birthday party for Brock? And I thought, you know what? Like, it'd be good, like, to have Brock's close friends because they miss him.
Yeah.
So we're doing a shark theme at our house on Sunday. Our team Brock committee has closest friends.
So for this birthday,
we're going to do it. And Jen and I picked out a place that we knew he would just love.
Okay.
And we're going to, it's a pool party outside and they're bringing a projector and we're going to watch the Meg.
Oh, that's which he would have loved. My kids love that.
Oh, yeah. Me too. I mean, he's just all into that stuff.
Yes.
So what Susan also started was, it's called Blessed by Brock.
Yes.
Where we ask you to do an act of kindness in Brock's honor. And we have cards so you can print them. I think I've handed out about 2,000 now. And so the idea is you do the act of kindness and you give them that card. So now they see Brock's story and that you did this kindness for in his honor. And then when you flip it over, it has DIPG facts.
Okay.
And we've actually already had two dad, because I sent one home, every single kid in Brock's school got one. And we've been handing them out. And so two people have already posted because we asked, like, if you're inclined, share it on Facebook because it brings our family joy when we're
on the Team Brock page.
Yes.
Tag the Team Brock.
Exactly.
Pages. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so, and one of the people actually donated $30. So I was like, that was really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so it's fun to see those people reaction because like they're posting, like they had no idea. And they've been saying like why they were touched or impacted.
Right.
And so it's really cool.
That is really cool.
And I like that idea. His 8th birthday, the first birthday, I got, majority of his Christmas presents, because we bought everything that he wanted. And then of course, couldn't play with any event. I quickly realized we are not giving them these presents.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to just donate them. So I asked his doctor and we took him up to Dell Children's and we had a cart and I walked around the floor and the kids got to pick out.
That's awesome.
It was really cool. It was really cool.
One thing I have already, I mean, I've only actually known you for an hour and a half or whatever at this point, but you are like a get things done girl.
Yeah.
Like that's really good. Like I've heard at least 8 different things now where I'm like, she just like really took charge with that and took the bull by the horns. Like that's kind
I have
of your
an
thing.
Idea and I implement.
It's good.
I am a business owner.
That's good. I like that about you. So just to kind of summarize, though, what you said, just in case anyone, you know, glossed over that, Wednesday,
June 26th
is Brock's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
In honor of that, every year you do Blessed by Brock, which is where what you would like is for people to do an act of kindness
for somebody else.
For somebody else. Mm-hmm. Even better than just doing the act of kindness would be if when they did the act of kindness, they handed out the card that kind of tells Brock's story, gives the information about DIPG, because then we're also raising awareness
exactly.
or remembering Brockwell.
Yes.
And so if anyone listening, just doing an act of kindness would be awesome on his birthday.
Yes.
Even better would be to hand out the card. And so you sent me a link, right, that I can put on my web, on my Facebook page, and it's a printable
yes.
card. So people can.
Yeah. And you can also just email me. It's melissa.fleming, my name, at thecurestartsnow.org,
okay.
which is also on the chapter page.
Okay.
And then if you just email me, I can turn around and email you the PDF to print.
Okay.
I've been mailing them to people. We're just kind of running out of time.
Okay. Well, I'm going to post that. I probably will post that tonight, which will be before this episode even posts, and just kind of give people
heads up.
And
I've got time to mail tomorrow. They'll get it in time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So the way we're going to conclude, and I kind of do this with every episode, is I like to do a segment that I call, and this is not the favorite, so you don't have to, it has coming in a minute. This is going to be a little bit heavy for a second, and then we're going to probably awkwardly transition into something really light, which might seem
good,
but for the heavy for a second, I do conclude every episode with what I call one thing, and it's kind of a way, it's kind of, well, you'll just see what it is. Okay. So I'm going to ask you 3 different questions, and they start with one thing. Okay. So my first question is this: what is one thing that Brock would be super surprised by if he was alive right now? Something maybe that has happened since he's passed away that if he knew about it, he'd be like, what? Surprised.
That's a hard question.
I think I have an answer if you don't have
one. What's your answer? And I'll tell you if I agree.
I think he'd be surprised about his little sister.
See, the reason I say no is because she knows Brock.
Okay.
I mean, she absolutely knows him.
Yes.
She
doesn't know her.
No.
No, I'm pretty sure he comes and visits her quite often.
Okay.
And she says his name before she ever said mommy and daddy.
Really?
And she would crawl to his picture and point to him.
Okay.
Or when I would be carrying and walk by, she'd say Brock.
Okay.
Yeah.
So and you don't think he would be surprised? You think he's well?
Oh, I'm pretty sure. I've told Blair, I'm sorry. I think Brock oversold me.
Yeah.
Because he thought he was his mommy, but you kind of got like, a subpar mom now. I'm doing my best, but yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why I say no, because okay. I think he wanted to make sure it was a girl, not a boy, to share his toys, but
yeah. Or to be like, I will be the only boy that was in the house.
I know we're out of time, but the craziest thing, he had this narwhal that he would sleep with. He loved narwhals, mm-hmm. a stuffed animal. And I would put her to bed, and all of a sudden she just started getting like real anxious. And I'm like, what do you want? And it throws me back to Brock. I mean, we can do this guessing game. I'm really good at this stuff. You don't have to be able to talk. I can communicate with you. And so I was like, you want something? Yes. And so, and she's just pointing towards Jenna's room. And I was like, you want Jenna's this. And then all of a sudden it hit me. And I said, do you want Brock's narwhal? Because we had it sitting on the dresser and in Jenna's room. Mm-hmm. And she shook her head yes. And I went and got it and I brought it to her and she's like cuddling it.
Oh my gosh.
And so I was like, okay, I'll see you in the morning. And I told James, like, James, like, it's not like I've ever showed her this narwhal.
Right.
I don't even know that she knows what a narwhal is,
right.
But it was evident that's what she wanted. So the next morning I was like, was Brock glad that he got his narwhal? Did he want his narwhal? And she shook her head, no. And I was like, well, did he want Jenna to have his narwhal? No. Did he want mommy to have his narwhal? No. Did he want you to have his narwhal? Yes. And so that's why I'm like, no,
yes.
No. I don't know what he'd be surprised at. That's a really hard question.
And maybe nothing.
Because I think he's seeing it all.
I was going to say, I think he's similar to you, believe he comes seeing it all anyway. Yes. And so there might not be anything he'd be surprised by. What do you think is one thing he'd be really proud of you about?
I think that he would be proud that I'm making his friends happy.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was such a caring kid and he would worry about his friends.
Yeah.
And I think me being around them would mm-hmm. make him happy. You know, sometimes people are like, oh, he'd be so proud that you're raising money. And I just sit there and go, I mean, I never told him I was going to keep fighting for him. I never had the conversation with him that he was going to die.
Right.
So I mean, sure, is he going to be happy? I'm happy. I'm sure he doesn't want me to cry.
Yeah.
But I know the kind of person he was, and I'm sure it'd make him really happy to see his friends having fun.
Yeah. I think that's really cool. When you were talking about doing like a birthday party and inviting his friends and just talking about how much his friends miss him, mm-hmm. I kind of almost, for me, I was like, oh, yeah, that's true. Because you think about how much you and James are grieving and his sister and grandparents and, you know, all of the normal people that would. But then there's a whole little portion of little, not anymore, but what were 7 and 8 year old kids, 7 year old kids.
And their parents were grieving. Their parents weren't sure how to deal with this either. I mean, I wasn't, but at least I was talking to a therapist. So then the parents were afraid to ask me. Mm-hmm. So then I would start that's also why I would do posts to help these parents, because I knew they were afraid to ask me, but I knew how to help them. And I didn't want these kids struggling. That is my biggest fear. I want these kids to see when things get really tough, you stand up and you fight and you change it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got to show them that, because the last thing I want is for them to spiral down.
Yeah.
Just like my daughter.
Right. Which we didn't even touch much on that. And there's so many things I would have liked to know about that too. Like what her grieving process looked like, other than I know the first 2 days she stayed in her room, but post to that and how she's been impacted both in positive ways and in negative ways. And I mean, there's a million, like I said,
follow-up questions.
We could have gone on for 4 hours, but what is one thing, and I don't want you to take this question the wrong way. But if you could have known, if there was a way, which you never would have wanted, but if there is a way that you could have known what was going to ultimately happen with Brock, is there anything that you would have changed about the first 7 years of his life?
So one of the things I am so grateful for is the answer is no.
Okay.
And I think that stems from James' job,
mm-hmm.
is that he was patrol for 23 years. So you never knew if he was going to come home or not. Now, I didn't worry about him.
Right.
And I'm sure there's a part of him that wish I would have worried more.
Yeah.
You're like, you know, my job is dangerous. Yes, I know, sweetie. Okay, good night. But but I always lived that you never know, and you enjoy each day. Mm-hmm. And I love having kids. Now, I'm not a teacher personality. I'm not the one that like oohs and ahs over babies.
Yeah.
But I love my kids and being a mom. And I think you have kids to have fun with your kids.
Yeah.
So every Saturday when he was working, we'd get up that morning and be like, what's our fun thing we're going to do today?
Yeah.
I mean, the Saturday before he was diagnosed, we had driven out to Cedar Creek near Bastrop to go to the dinosaur park. And mm-hmm. it was just the three of us, dinosaurs, and learning about them. And we've gone there a few times, but we were just going to do that for the day.
Yeah.
And so it was always like that. Like, and in the evenings, I mean, I know a lot of families are into sports and their kids love it. We didn't have tons of activities. We built a pool every evening. We were in the pool. So we were in the pool or we were going doing fun things. And so I did really enjoy that time. I think a harder question has always been like, if I had known he was going to die, would I have stopped at Jenna?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's probably a harder question to ask.
Right.
And I sit there and there's times where I'd be like, I mean, there are times where I was like, James, like, we should have never gotten married. Mm-hmm. We should have never had kids. We wouldn't know this
wouldn't
pain.
Have happened. Yeah.
But then I sit there and go, but I just got pregnant again and had a third kid. So I think the answer would be I would have done it because I just chose to do it again. So am I glutton for punishment?
Right.
Or am I going
to
embrace God?
Well, and you got to know Brock.
Right.
I mean,
and
you know, like,
it's just, you know, it's a pain that you just never want to experience.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it could happen to Jenna or Blair. She could get something else. And I chose to have another kid. So I think no matter what, I would choose because I want that love and I want to give it and receive it.
Has this made you, has what happened with Brock made you? Because you just said like, this could happen to Blair. You know, has this made you a more anxious person? Are you now like, oh my gosh, what if something happens for my other kids or to James? Or
I don't sweat the small stuff. I sweat the odd stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I have different reactions.
Yeah.
So an example is Blair. It took her 16 months to walk.
Mm-hmm.
Jenna and Brock were both 14 months.
Okay.
And I literally said, okay, Brock, if she doesn't start talk, because I talk to him every day, Brock, if she does not start walking in the next couple of weeks, I'm getting an MRI.
Yeah.
Because not being able to walk is a brain tumor.
Right.
Not necessarily DIPG, but something neurological could be going on.
Right.
Now, that is not a normal reaction of a mom to say, I need an MRI if my kid doesn't walk.
Yeah.
But I said, Brock, you better help her. and you need to talk to her.
Yeah.
And then the school said, we're going to go ahead and bump her. She would take a few steps, but it wasn't her main mode of transportation.
Okay.
She's still crawling. And so they wanted to move her up. And so I also talked to Blair. I said, Blair, you want to go to the big girl class? Huh? That's how she says yes. I said, okay, well, if you want to go to the big girl class, you're going to have to walk. Okay, so I need you to try and you're going to do this. Huh? Okay, then I'm going to send you over. So between Brock and her, mm-hmm. within 3 days, it was her main mode of transportation.
Awesome.
And so I was like, thank you, Brock. We don't need an MRI now. So that's how I'm different. She's thrown up a couple times for no reason. I'm very anxious about that.
Yeah.
And so, but I mean, what are you going to test her for?
Right.
But if it happens a few more times, I'm going to be like, do some blood work.
Yeah.
Where I wouldn't have done that.
With
but if she gets a cold, I don't care. Let's give her some medicine. Other things, she picks up food off the floor. Nursing mm-hmm. with the first two kids, I nursed for a year.
Yep.
Third time, I'm older. I'm tired.
Yes.
I'm not doing
old
this.
Old and tired.
And I was like, it didn't save my second kid.
Yeah.
So why? Yeah. I'm not putting the pressure on myself. So it's things that are
it's just
off.
Different. Mm-hmm. I love what you said, though. And I would like to just reiterate it one more time because it actually hit home with me when you said it just about how you actually do not have any regrets because you felt like you made the most of the 7 years and enjoyed the heck out of it. And I do not feel like I always do that. And I would bet that a lot of moms listening feel the same way. And so I think that is one of many amazing messages that you have and wise words that you have to give is to do that. I know that it's not realistic to say that you're going to love every single moment.
And there were the times where I would yell enough at the two of them.
Yeah.
And we would have the conversations when Jenna and Brock would fight.
Mm-hmm.
Jenna, what is your job? Take care of Brock. Brock, what is your job? Take care of Jenna. I would make them say it.
Yep.
I mean, I had my moments.
Yeah.
But I think all in all, like you got to like slow down.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, my kids, I talked about the green couch upstairs and watching movies on Netflix. That was exactly where he wanted to go from the hospital because on the weekends we would fold out that couch and we would sleep up there. And when they were asleep, I'd go downstairs. But it's just to enjoy those little moments.
Yep.
And I know like things can be stressful. Trust me, things can be stressful. But they're the good in your life.
Right.
I mean, everything else, just tune it out. Like they are the pure, the innocent,
Appreciate it.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. I like that mm-hmm. a lot. Okay. Well, only because we have to. Yes, we're going to wrap up. And so I prepared you for having to. It's funny. You make me laugh because these last three questions, I feel like, okay, this is the easy part. You've made it through. Now just answer these three easy questions. And you told me that these were three of the hardest ones for you, which is, you know, funny and ironic. But I ask everyone, so I have to ask you, what is your favorite Austin specific place right now? Maybe you've had good service there. Maybe you've had just a great experience.
Well, mine was more kids because you said kids was an option.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. So our favorite thing is to go to Botanical Gardens.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's just peaceful and it's calm and the kids can explore and climb. And they can be loud and you don't, you know, one of the things I hate is when I see like parents are always shushing their kids.
Right.
They're like a kid. Now, don't be obnoxious and scream and yell. Like, I mean, there's a balance, but I look for things that we can do that I don't have to worry if they're being too loud.
Right.
It's outside.
Right.
I mean, it's beautiful. So I like going there.
Okay. So you just actually, there's two different things now that you've said that I'm like, oh, I haven't done that with my kids. So I have not taken my kids to the Botanical Gardens.
Oh, it's awesome.
I went there as a kid with my parents.
They've renovated it.
My kids. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. And then the dinosaur thing, I've always said I'm going to do that.
Oh, it's cool.
In Cedar Creek.
So it's really cool.
Both of those things.
Yes. Now. They will like that.
Okay. Is there a show you're watching and loving right now?
Y'all are gonna laugh. I love The Walking Dead.
Oh, a lot of people do.
I've never watched it.
But.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because I thought, am I gonna look at it different now?
Right.
Kids dead. But yes. I know it sounds so crass, but I don't. I'm numb to things. And, and so it's interesting because The Walking Dead pre-Brock, I would get real anxious and that was like the excitement. And now I don't get anxious. It's more like, it's just entertaining. It's
fascinating.
Yeah. But I have to, it's an escape.
Yep.
It's an escape and it's like nothing that's real.
Right.
I mean, I don't need real life. I got enough real life.
Yes.
So that's my show.
Okay. And that's funny because my podcast is called The Mother Freaking Real Life. So you have got some real life. And then is there a book you're reading right now?
So I don't have tons of time to read, but I just traveled on a plane. Jen and I went to Orlando. Disney,
right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was an all-state trip. So they paid, which was even better. So I took a picture of the books. I didn't even know. I read Sharp Objects.
Oh, yeah.
By
Gillian Flynn or something.
There you go. See, there you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when I do read, I have to read something that's suspenseful and a thriller.
It's again kind of like an escape, right? Like,
yeah. And it's got to be a little bit exciting because I'm numb to things.
Yeah.
So I'm not into like romance, obviously Walking Dead and here's Sharp Objects. This is great. Okay. Right. So now this is why these questions are hard. Now I'm doing a whole different portrayal of my personality.
Your dark and twisted
side. I'm very diverse here. Let's just use the word diverse.
Okay. So Walking Dead and Sharp Objects and Zilker Botanical Gardens.
There you go. For the peace.
What are you drinking from Starbucks? What's your coffee drink?
Vanilla latte with almond milk.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm an almond milk girl versus cow milk girl.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I think we absolutely just have to wrap up. Please do look at my Facebook page because I'm going to post a lot of the stuff we've talked about, links to stuff, the printable for
Blessed by Brock.
Blessed by Brock.
Like our Facebook page, please.
Yes. Team Brock Fleming mm-hmm. on Facebook. Like it, follow it, do all of that stuff. Okay. Thank you very much for being here. I know that couldn't have been easy to talk about.
No, I really appreciate it. I take any opportunity to talk about my little man to help others. And so hopefully this helps somebody.
Yes. And thanks, Susan, for recommending.
Yay, Susan. There's obviously common theme people in my life.
All right. We are signing off. Goodbye.